The Money Show. Investment
School. Seven questions that you need to ask yourself. If you've got a question for Gary Boyston this evening, if you want to add to his list of questions, give us a call on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567 or simply drop us a voice note. If you've got anything to do with money, frankly, anything to do with how to manage your money better, if it's not appropriate for Gary, we'll certainly pass it on to Warren Ingram. But yes, for Gary Boyston, director at Rand Swiss this evening, your WhatsApps can also come through to us this evening as well. Welcome to The Money Show this evening, our investment school. Seven questions before you make any investment, and one way, critically, to remember them all. I feel an anagram coming on. Gary Boyston, good evening to you. Welcome to The Money Show. What's the first question? I suppose most people look at investment and go, ooh, it's risky. Risky. I don't like investing money because it's risky. Talk to me about the risk when it comes to investing, because surely that's the first step we must take.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first question I've got is what are the risks to any investment when you're considering an investment? And if you're looking at an investment thinking, oh, all investment is too risky, you're actually running a type of risk yourself, which is longevity risk, is that you're probably going to outlive your money if you don't invest it. So there are all sorts of different types of risks. And I think it's one of the things that I've kind of specifically tailored these seven questions to retail investors. This is not how you go about doing a due diligence on a company or potential investment as an institution, but just, you know, as the average man on the street. And you'll be surprised from the retail clients that we deal with how few people ask about the risks of investments. They're so focused on the return side of the equation that they actually forget about the risk side. Now obviously there are many, many different types of risks. So you've got, but I think the one that the market focuses on, the people focus on the most is probably market risk. You know, as an investor, most people see that as either a standard deviation or volatility. It's, you know, how predictable is my return going to be? But that certainly isn't the only risk when you're considering an investment into financial markets or into any of the asset classes. There's things like geographic risk, you know, which jurisdiction are you exposed to? If you are going to become a foreign investor, you run currency risk. You know, what happens if the currency moves dramatically and all your money is tucked away in the, you know, an offshore product that is linked to dollars, and you know the dollar doesn't get stronger, the dollar actually gets weaker for a change, and suddenly you don't have the returns that you're expecting. There's things like liquidity risk that you need to consider. That's the risk of being able to actually sell your investment. And I heard one of your earlier guests talking about those Mandela coins. We've had tons of people coming to us and saying, but I bought this Mandela coin for 10,000 Rand. It's a 5 Rand coin. And they're going, I just want to sell it for 10,000 Rand. They realize there's no liquidity to sell a 5 Rand Mandela coin at 10,000 Rand. It's only worth 5 Rand. So there's all sorts of risks that you've got to consider. And I think maybe one of the most important risks that people don't consider is also who are you dealing with? Because it's all great that the investment is solid, but if the conduit into that investment is not solid, that is absolutely crucial. And it really comes down to who is the person selling you this investment? Who is the person that you're dealing with that is facilitating this investment? And there's all sorts of ways for South Africans specifically to go and test this. Now, one of the best ways to do this is to go to the FSCA website. You just go onto FASE, the FASE portal. Every investment professional that approaches you with an investment opportunity should have an FSP number. You can either go and plug their surname, their company name, or their FSP number into the website. You search, it'll tell you exactly what products they're registered for. It'll tell you whether their license is active. If you suddenly see that they don't have a license, they're not registered, or their license is suspended for some reason, immediately you know that there should be something has gone wrong here. And then, of course, there's the logical stuff that you should do. Just Google them as well. There's plenty of review sites on investment professionals. So you know, with the power of the internet these days, it is fairly easy to do a due diligence. But so many people, I suppose, forget about it and just don't go ahead and do it.
No, exactly. I mean, you're talking about risk, and I loved something David Shapiro tweeted about the other day, and I'm going to get it wrong, but I'm going to express the sentiment. And he was saying he doesn't care where a company is based, he doesn't care where it's domiciled, he doesn't care where it does business. He buys a portfolio of companies. He wants to own companies. He doesn't want to buy regions. He doesn't want to buy anything else. He wants to buy great companies that give great returns. And by their nature, great companies that give great returns will be global players that operate, unique propositions in global markets. That's the extent of it, whether it be a Nussbaum or whether it be an Apple or whether it be a Google or anything else along those lines. That he prefers from a risk perspective, rather than worrying about, you know, whether or not the Chinese are going to be doing X and Y, or whether the Americans are going to be doing Z, or whether the Boris Johnson's going to refuse to move out of 10 Downing Street, or whatever the case might be. 20 great companies, let them worry about that stuff. Let them manage the chaos and the noise in the world. Then you simply buy into the strategy of the company.
Yeah, well, that actually, I suppose we could probably jump ahead to question six. If you want to
Okay, all right. Well, no. If we're going to get now, I want to go in alphabetical order because it's important to go in alphabetical order.
Okay, because there's an acronym. So maybe we should tell everyone the acronym before we go ahead. So the acronym is going to, it's going to all spell out returns. So the first letter of returns is R, and we've just discussed risk. So the next thing that we're going to talk about is the E in returns, and that's the expected upside return. It is the actual word. It's returns. It's all about what is being promised. Now, in any investment, of course, there's the view of why are you investing? And you're investing to make your money make more money, of course. You want that return. You want whatever you put in, you want to get more back. That's the whole point of investing. Now, I think one of the big mistakes that people make about looking at returns is they tend to focus on the history. And you know, I kind of deal with a lot of financial planners and we mystery shop a lot of them just to see what the quality is out there as well. And so often, you know, when vetting an investment product, the default position is just to go and look at the history of the returns of the product and then kind of extrapolate forward and think, this is how it's going to be forever. So whether you're looking at an ETF, whether you're looking at a unit trust, or whether you're looking at a stock, it is useful to look at the historical performance. If you know it has this level of volatility and it's done this kind of return every year, it does give you an indication. But I think what's far more important when you're trying to gauge what your expected return is going to be is to try and understand the fundamental composition of the investment opportunity. So if you're talking about David Shapiro's portfolio, big international global stocks, you can understand what a reasonable rate of return is. If you're buying into something like Apple, you can understand what Apple's business does. You can understand the fundamental composition of Apple and see what kind of either dividends it's going to pay, what kind of capital gain if it's doing share buybacks, what kind of capital gain it's going to generate for you. But this comes from everything from a big international stock all the way down to, let's say you're buying a small flat in Sandton that you want to rent out. You can look at that and you can look at what is the vacancy rate in the complex that you're buying in. You can look at all those that fundamental composition, and you can make a fairly educated guess on what that expected return is going to be. And if you don't understand how that expected return is going to be generated, you need to rethink your investment almost immediately, because if you don't understand where that's coming from, the person selling it to you, and you can't see how it's working, just take it with a pinch of salt. Try and understand the fundamental composition of the investment, not just the promised historical returns of the investment, I think would be the advice, and the E, which is the expected returns.
Exactly. I mean, and again, interrogate that expectation very, very, very seriously. Time in the market is better than timing the market, they say. And I suppose it comes down to a question of duration. How much time are you prepared to put money away for?
Yeah, absolutely. So time is fundamental in anything to do with investment. So, you know, from the most simple point of views, I mean, this is a very general discussion that we're having. And before you plan to invest in anything, you really should look at what the time horizon is that your capital, because you're essentially deploying capital, how long is your capital going to be locked up to generate that return? And also kind of understand the liquidity. But, you know, if you're saving for your kids' education, for example, your time horizon is very different. If you are saving for to pay for a car in a year's time. If you're saving for your retirement, obviously it's a much longer term thing. If you are busy retiring and you're kind of going through that process of converting your pension products to changing your RA into a living annuity, your investment time horizon is very different. So the time horizon, gives you an indication of the kind of market risk, so that volatility risk that you can adopt. It also plays into all sorts of other parts of investment as well. So if you look at something like options, the time decay on an option, for example, what we call theta. They call it theta profit eater. If you don't understand the time to maturity of your option, there's no way that you can price that. So time and understanding the time around any investment decision is absolutely crucial. How long is the money going to be locked up, and what kind of return would you demand for locking up your money in that specific investment vehicle? Absolutely crucial to ask before you make any investment decision.
Let's do one more letter of this particular acronym. We're making up the acronym RETURN. returns. Yes, there's an S at the end of it. We're making up that acronym this evening. We've spoken about risk. We've spoken about expected returns. We've spoken about the time you need to put money away. What about goals? Every investment advisor worth their salt to say, what's your goal? And I've always found that a very silly question. I want to make as much money as possible, as fast as possible, with zero risk. That's the goal. Okay, there's the goal. But what is you to have a realistic and ultimate goal, and to understand what that goal is, so that when the wheels do come off, as they will from time to time, you don't lose your marbles about it.
No, absolutely, and I think that's something that we deal with all the time. You ask someone, but what is the goal of this money? Because remember, when you go to an investment advisor, he you know, if this is your first meeting, he doesn't know who you are. He doesn't know, is this retirement savings? Is this, you know, a short-term investment that you literally are going to need this money in a year's time? That's going to almost limit dramatically change the investment products that are going to be appropriate for you. So, you know, understanding what the ultimate goal is crucial. Now, the goal of, as you say, make my money, make more money, that isn't the right way of approaching any investment. You know, you've got to look at the risks. You've got to look at the type of return that you want to make as well. So remember, you know, if you're trying to take into consideration the tax efficiency of investment, do you want to generate capital gains? Do you want to generate income? You know, if you're a retired person and you're drawing down on a pension fund, for example, that's coming to you as income. Now, if you're going to, you know, make another discretionary investment that's going to increase your income even further, suddenly you're going to have a much larger tax bill than you maybe necessarily needed to pay. So instead, maybe you look at an investment that's going to spit out capital growth instead. So there's all those kind of subtleties that you've got to understand, and that you can't understand that without understanding the goal of either what the client is looking for or what you are ultimately trying to achieve. And specking that out is very, very important. You need to know, you know, what your time horizon is, why are you saving this money, when do you need to access this money, and what kind of risk can you put this money at? And only once you understand your investment goal can you really answer those questions.
Gary Boyson, director at Rand Swiss, is headmaster of the investment school tonight as we build the acronym RETURNS to help you get the seven most important questions asked and answered before you apply your money to any kind of investment. We'll get back with the costs. We'll get back with what we refer to as the rates. What does it cost to invest you? What the goals are, of course, and ultimately, you know, how the investment works. And then finally, how does it fit into the setting that you're in? If you're planning to emigrate, if you're planning to stay, if you're planning to work until you're 70 or 90, how's all of that sort of stuff work in a moment?
The Money Show.
Investment School.
How much should you pay for an investment? What is the rate that you should pay? Gary Boyson, it's a critical part, of course, of asking the critical questions around investing. Now, ultimately, the price you pay for investing can dramatically affect the returns you earn.
Of course, and I think it's well understood by the retail market that fees that you pay to an investment professional are fees that won't compound over time and that won't drop into your ultimate pot of cash. So it is definitely a popular question, and one of the first things that many clients ask: how much are you going to charge me for this? You know, how much are you going to earn? Now, as I said, I do a lot of mystery shopping. So I have, you know, vetted some of I'm not going to give any names, but some of the big institutions that provide, let's say, pension products. And I've got to be honest, some of the upfront loads that get charged are staggering. I mean, I looked at potentially doing just a straight retirement product where we're going to do a monthly contribution to the maximum of what an RA can do, which is around 350,000 Rand per year. And the initial fees for the first year were 67% of the investment. I was floored. I thought, this is bordering on criminal. How, in my first year of contributions of 350,000 Rand, I'm going to give away 67% in fees? And I thought, I honestly didn't believe that happened in our industry until I saw it. But then on the other hand, so there are some mind-boggling fees, and you need to understand the maths. You need to really interrogate what the broker is charging and what the ultimate fees around your investment are going to be, because they can be bordering on criminal. On the other hand, you almost get the pendulum swinging totally to the other side. And I mean, there's another story where, I mean, we run a tax-free savings account product for clients and we do it for free. It's kind of a pro bono, a goodwill product that we do for any of our clients, because we really love the TFSA and was actually rated best TFSA in South Africa 2 years in a row. I've had a person complaining about the fees, and I had to sort of sit them down and say, but it's free. You're not paying anything for this. There are no fees attached. And I think it comes down to, unfortunately, so many people maybe don't have a handle. There's either a suspicion, or they don't have a handle on the actual maths or where to get the right information to kind of price a product. And there's that kind of suspicion around it that even when you are getting a good deal, sometimes what happens is people actually miss out on the good deal because they're so concerned about the fee, and they don't realize that the fee is very, very reasonable. So I think in a perfect world, the right way to vet fees is to try and go and compare it. I mean, you need to shop around when you're doing these things. And it's to try and compare it to the industry and try and put the fee that you're paying in the context of the industry. Let me tell you, 67% of your first year's premium is criminal. But in general, you know, if you're looking at advisor fees, if you can get away with an advisor fee combined with an asset manager fee combined with a platform fee, because so often, you know, in retirement products specifically, you might need to be on a platform combined with the administration fees. If you can get it below sort of, you know, between 1.5% and 2%, you're probably paying a fair rate. It's not a great rate, but it's a fair rate. We have seen, you know, specifically in the retirement industry, fees as high as, I thought I found the highest when I found 6 or 7% a year. And there, that's essentially eroding all of your returns in many cases. So you've got to be cognizant of this.
Absolutely. We've got 2 minutes. I've got two letters to go. NNS, sure. The nature of the investment, and then, of course, your personal situation, I think is absolutely critical as we wrap up returns.
Sure. One minute each. Looking at the nature of the investment, I think the nature of the investment, basically, there are many different types of investments. As I said, you could be buying an investment property. You could be, you know, going into listed stocks. And the traditional splits that we see are the asset class splits. So if you're not a financial professional, they basically stocks and bonds, which are your two big things. Stocks pay dividends, bonds pay coupons. It's a great way to compound returns over time. You then have property, also a fantastic asset class because you get rental of property and some capital appreciation. Third big asset class, then it's alternatives and cash, really. And alternatives are your Krugerrands, your baseball cards, your expensive wines. All of that, it kind of generates its value from scarcity. It doesn't kind of give you a return, but maybe because it's scarce, it'll go up in value. Normally the smaller part of your portfolio. Now, when you're actually trying to work out where you're putting your money, each of those has different structures around it. So stocks, bonds, the traditional asset classes, stocks, bonds, they have a lot of regulation around them. So going and buying, like David Shapiro does, a couple of international companies, there's so much regulation protecting you as an investor. The level of due diligence you need is probably less. If it's listed versus not listed, for example, a listed investment, you probably need to do less due diligence than on an unlisted investment, which doesn't have that level of regulation around it. So understand the nature of the investment and understand that, you know, more formal investments generally require less due diligence work. The more speculative, the more alternative. When someone comes with this great scheme, but you know you can't really find any information on it, those are the ones you have to look at the most carefully. And I suppose the last one is the S of returns, which is your situation, the state of affairs, or the setting of your investment portfolio. And that really is any investment that you make should be done in the context of your other investments. If your entire portfolio is sitting in a global stock portfolio, do you know what you probably shouldn't be looking at for your next investment? A global stock portfolio. You do need to diversify. You need to try and generate either non-correlated or negatively correlated asset classes just to try and balance out your risk and make sure that you have eggs in many baskets, and that overall your wealth building strategy will remain intact no matter what the shock to the system or the situation that may arise in future is.
There is a huge amount in there, Gary Boyce, and thank you. Directed Rand Swiss this evening, the acronym RETURNS. I would suggest downloading the podcast. I'd suggest listening to it again because there's a huge wealth of information tucked up in there. Thank you very much. Gary Boyson at Rand Swiss.